as he had a sense of impending punishment, but couldn't place it. Then he remembered his 8:30 appointment with his bank manager and sprang out of bed. At the same moment that his wife Louisa howled, "No, no, no," and pulled the sheet over her head, because mornings were her worst time. "Why not yes, yes, yes for a change?" he asked her in the mirror, while he waited for the tap to run hot. "Let's have a bit of optimism round the place, shall we, Lou?" Louisa groaned, but her corpse under the sheet didn't stir. So Pendle amused himself with a game of cocky repartee with a newsreader in order to lift his spirits. "The commander in charge of U.S. Southern Command last night again insisted that the United States will honor its treaty obligations to Panama, both in the principle and in the deed," the newsreader proclaimed with male majesty. "He's a con, darling," Pendle retorted, lathering soap onto his face. "If it wasn't a con, you wouldn't go on saying it, would you, General? The Panamanian president has today arrived in Hong Kong for the start of his 2-week tour of Southeast Asian capitals," said the newsreader. "Here we go, here's your boss," Pendle called, and held out a soapy hand to command her attention. "He is accompanied by a team of the country's economic and trade experts, including his forward planning advisor on the Panama Canal, Dr. Ernesto Delgado." "Well done, Ernie," said Pendle approvingly, with an eye to his recumbent wife. "On Monday, the presidential party will continue to Tokyo for substantive talks aimed at increasing Japanese investment in Panama," said the newsreader. "And those geishas aren't going to know what hit them," said Pendle in a lower tone, as he shaved his left cheek. "Not with our Ernie on the prowl." Louisa woke up with a crash. "Harry, I do not wish you to speak of Ernesto in those terms, even in jest, please." "No, dear. Very sorry, dear. It shall not happen again. Ever," he promised, while he navigated the difficult bit just under the nostrils. But Louisa was not appeased. "Why can't Panama invest in Panama?" she complained, sweeping aside the sheet and sitting bolt upright in the white linen nightdress she had inherited from her mother. "Why do we have to have Asians to do it? We're rich enough. We've got 107 banks in this town alone, don't we? Why can't we use our own drug money to build our own factories and schools and hospitals?" The "we" was not literal. Louisa was a Zonian, raised in the Canal Zone in the days when, by extortionate treaty, it was American territory forever, even if the territory was only 10 miles wide and 50 miles long, and surrounded by despised Panamanians. Her late father was an army engineer, who, having been seconded to the canal, took early retirement to become a servant of the Canal Company. Her late mother was a libertarian Bible teacher in one of the zone's segregated schools. "You know what they say, dear," Pendle replied, holding up an earlobe and shaving beneath it. He shaved as others might paint, loving his bottles and brushes. "Panama's not a country. It's a casino, and we know the boys who run it. You work for one of them, don't you?" He had done it again. When his conscience was bad, he couldn't help himself any more than Louisa could help rising. "No, Harry, I do not. I work for Ernesto Delgado, and Ernesto is not one of them. Ernesto is a straight arrow. He has ideals. He cherishes Panama's future as a free and sovereign state in the community of nations. Unlike them, he is not on the take. He is not carpetbagging his country's inheritance. That makes him very special and very, very rare." Secretly ashamed of himself, Pendle turned on the shower and tested the water with his hand. "Pressure's down again," he said brightly. "Serves us right for living on a hill." Louisa got out of bed and yanked her nightdress over her head. She was tall and long-waisted, with dark, tough hair and the high breasts of a sportswoman. When she forgot herself, she was beautiful. But when she remembered herself again, she stooped her shoulders and looked glum. "Just one good man, Harry," she persisted, as she rammed her hair inside her shower cap. "That's all it takes to make this country work. One good man of Ernesto's caliber. Not another orator, not another egomaniac. Just one good Christian ethical man is all it takes. One decent, capable administrator who is not corrupt, who can fix the